that.
I don't. That's all I need to hear.
Everybody in the committee room on a quiet down. We'll bring the meeting to order. Looks like we got a quorum. Do a quick count. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, it looks like we got 10 or 11 here. Looks like we got a quorum. We'll call the meeting to order. The Public Safety Policy and Finance. And Representative, anybody had a chance to look at the meeting minutes that could approve them? Move the minutes? Representative McDonald moves the minutes of, what's the date?
January 20th.
Hearing no objections, all to approve the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, carried. Today we have two bills up. I think we're going to switch the order and bring up Representative Drazkowski with House File 161. Representative Drazkowski, you want to state your name and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Steve Drazkowski from Mazeppa.
Okay, House File 161. Would somebody like to move Representative Drazkowski's bill?
So moved.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 161 be passed and recommend it be passed and re-referred to civil law.
Okay, everybody hear that? Motion recommended to pass and refer to civil law. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Got, hold on a second. Oh, I'm sorry. We don't vote on it now. We're just moving the bill. Excuse me. So moved. Just about put slip one in on you, Representative Mullery. Okay, Representative Drazkowski, if you would go ahead with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you want to handle the DE2 amendment now, or how would you like to work with that, or should I give my presentation first?
Now, why don't we get it in the proper form that you want it in first, and... Representative Kelly, would you like to move the amendment?
Yes, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, DE2?
Or the DE2. I'm sorry, DE1 and 2, I guess.
Just two? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the DE2 amendment.
Hang on, we'll check. Representative Kelly moves the DE2 amendment to get it in the proper form the author wants it in. The objection, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, over the last several weeks, actually before session began, one of the areas that I have been focusing on with my legislative work is working on mandate reduction. We know we're in a situation now where government's got an appetite that's $6.2 billion more than the money that the people have and can afford. And one of the ways that we can relieve some of the pressure from this state budget dilemma is to remove those mandates that exist between state and local governments, to remove some of those strings, if you will. And so I've been working hard on a variety of mandate reduction bills and actually have a package together as well that we'll be bringing forward. But this is one of those efforts. And as a matter of fact, this idea was brought to me by one of the sheriffs in my district back in 2008 as we struggled with a very similar budget situation back then. I was asking folks for different types of mandates locally that we could either get rid of or reduce. And so that's where this bill came from. So my first inclination was to write it in 2008 really as taking the permit to purchase from 1 year to 5 years, and so that's how I introduced the bill. And so over the last week or so, though, as I looked at this issue, we looked at some of the redundancies, which I will get into later within the law, and it made sense to actually move for a full repeal of the permit to purchase in Minnesota law. So we wrote the amendment as a DE1 amendment over the last couple of days, and then the next generation of that you see in front of you, which is a DE2 amendment. And the DE2 amendment is basically the DE1 amendment, which was to move from the 1 to 5 days, which it was, to a repeal. And the DE2 amendment took that repeal and added on some cross-reference corrections, which are included on page 1 of the bill. With that, if we look at the DE2 amendment, which would be the bill before you at this point, page 1 of the bill includes two cross-reference checks. One deals with someone who is not a federally licensed dealer and holding them accountable to act within the law. Section 2 is the second cross-reference check, and really gets rid of some redundancies. If you will look at the item that used to be clause 3 there, that particular area really covers the other two areas and also removes a redundancy that exists as we move to repeal these three sections in law. Page 2, 2.1 to 2.3 is the revisor's instructions to instruct the revisor to go through statute, and should they find any cross-references that we did not capture in this bill, to give them the authority to delete those areas within in statute that we missed. 2.4 and 2.5 is really part of the bill, if you will, which it repeals section 624.7131, which is the transferee permit, 624.7132, which is the report of transfer and the investigation, and 624.715, which is the standardized form language, which will become obsolete should we repeal the other two. So that is the bill. Members, I haven't put all my numbers together in terms of the amount of savings that this is going to provide to local units of government. As a matter of fact, we have asked for that fiscal information from House fiscal staff. That is still forthcoming. But I can tell you I've asked one of my county sheriffs, and this was just one county sheriff in a county, did not include any of the cities or the police chiefs, but this particular county sheriff said in a county with a population of 21,000, which is a small county, that this will save their staff anywhere between a half and a full hour of work per week. So if you extrapolate that up to some of the metro counties, you're looking at a full position or positions that will be able to be eliminated by the cities and counties in those jurisdictions because of the elimination of this redundant mandate. Members, the two primary sections of law that we are moving to repeal here were actually written into law in 1977 before we had any federal instant background checks, which is a system that we are under now. And so this was the first language that we had for permitting handguns under Chapter 624. I assume has evolved some since then. What we have had, members, though, is as early as 1998, we had the evolution of the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, which is a national system. It's an instant check system in which somebody applying for a permit or applying to buy a gun of any sort has the ability to learn within seconds or minutes as to whether they qualify under federal law. So that evolved in 1998. It's been updated again and strengthened, actually, as late as July 1st of 2010, in which some of the data sharing enhancements that were written in by the 2009 legislature, which included sending in the mental health commitment information from the state databases automatically to the federal database, to the FBI and the NICS system, so that they had it and it was readily available there when federal firearms licensed dealers made those inquiries. The bill again simply removes an unnecessary, redundant, and expensive, unfunded local government mandate. We basically have in Minnesota now two separate approaches that are very redundant to checking the background of people who are looking to purchase handguns. We as all other 49 states have access to and are required to use the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. In addition to this, we have a state permit system that is renewed, that the purchaser or potential purchaser is required to renew every single year and requires staff time. That permit is required by law. It is required to be issued to the applicant as long as the applicant meets the letter of the law. And members, I don't have it in front of me, but one of the sections that we are looking to repeal actually explicitly says the conditions under which, and I can find those for you as we bring up other presenters, but explicitly says the conditions under which you can be denied a permit to purchase within Minnesota. And so, members, there's several handouts in your packets. One is a NICS overview. One is a copy of the ATF form 4473, which not only is the form that you use if you're going to purchase a gun of any sort to get the NICS check at a federally licensed firearm dealer, but is also the, as I understand, and we might want to hear from the police chiefs when they come up, is also the same form that many counties use to accommodate taking in information for the state permit. So it appears, at least in some jurisdictions, maybe in all, that we are using the same form that we are using for the federal NICS check, NICS system. So the evidence of redundancy is very apparent. There is an NRA outline of support from the National Rifle Association, I think that is very informative to you, that talks again about some of the history more in detail, some details about the NICS system. There is an NRA fact sheet that talks about the reductions in violent crimes that we have seen over the last decades, placing current murder rates at a 49-year low at a time when handgun ownership's at an all-time high. There is a color map in your packets that outlines which states have or use the federal NICS system exclusively, and the white states on here, one of which we are, and that's 12 states that not only require the NICS system but also require another redundant state permit system. And it's my understanding that many of these states are currently in process of having the same discussion we're having right now as we look at removing unnecessary and burdensome state mandates that are in front of them. So those items are there. Lastly, there is a letter of support from Sheriff Dave Brand in Winona County. He wrote this letter, members, I apologize, before I actually came forward with the DE2 amendment. He wrote it to the original bill, but he is very vehement in his support for the removal of this redundant mandate. Members, I'd take questions. Otherwise, Mr. Chair, Mr. Joe Olson would like to speak to the committee.
Any questions so far, members? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point on process, I guess, Mr. Chair. This bill that you're presenting, Representative Dukrowski, represents such a huge change in state statute and Minnesota policy. I'm just a little amazed it wasn't brought forward as a bill so that we had some kind of warning and some kind of notice to the public so they could be aware of what kind of changes you're proposing here rather than a delete all amendment at the last minute. So I guess in terms of process, I'm not pleased at all with the way that we're moving forward with this and haven't had the opportunity to for the public really to weigh in on the front end of this. So just a comment on that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson, I guess a comment would be that it was the amendment was published and things happen here fast, and there have been a number of bills when these gun laws were instituted that came with less warning and less preparation for citizens to react to them. And somebody must know out there, because we're getting scores of emails from all over the state, so I didn't think it was too bad a job of notification. Representative Mullery.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson raised something I was going to raise later. I had assumed that the chair was just going to lay this over because it is an incredible change in the bill, and I certainly wouldn't have allowed something like that as chair to totally surprise people in the community. I know a lot of people showed up, but I think most of the associations haven't even had a chance to talk to their members and things like that, so I would hope that the chair considers laying this over for a later bringing it up or something before just moving it on.
Representative Mullery, the chair is to attention to pass this bill today when the testimony is done. It was a bigger change along 1975 when I was sitting on the balcony of the House of Representatives and Warren Spanis's handgun permit bill passed by one vote, and the same notification then, huge change in law, and this way we're just trying to offer the same favor back. We've had plenty of notification. People know about it, and basically my intention is to pass the bill on today. So, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would echo the comments of my colleagues here, and I would urge you to reconsider. Clearly one bad process doesn't warrant another one. Two wrongs don't make a right. And, you know, it is true, and you and I have been here for a long time, and it is true that it's unfortunately more typical than not that we would have changes on short notice on a number of legislative proposals over the years here that have caught people a bit flat-footed. However, Mr. Chair, very few involve anything as controversial as the issue before us. This issue is highly divisive in the American public. It's highly divisive in the Minnesota public. And what's at stake is the highest stakes. And you and I clearly over the years have disagreed on this issue. But I think where we haven't disagreed is that it's vitally important that because of the high stake the public attaches to something like this, that we proceed with a very deliberate, careful process. And I think you're opening yourself up and you know, you've been a good legislator over the years, and I'm just, you know, giving you advice. I think you're opening yourself up to some pretty harsh criticism that's going to take us away from the issue here and really focus us on the process here. And so, Mr. Chair, I humbly offer you that advice.
And so noted from my friend and Representative Mariani. And this isn't nearly the harsh criticism as I'm going to receive when I pass the Castle Doctrine this year, so I'm ready for that. So, any other comments?
Mr. Chair?
Okay, Representative Drazkowski, if you introduce your testifier there and have him state his name. And
Mr. Chair, if I could, just a quick comment.
Oh, go ahead.
I think Representative Mariani's right. Probably the issue here is maybe the controversy around the policy change, but I would note that the mechanics of what the bill does is very simple to understand. I mean, relative to other bills, Representative, it's pretty straightforward. It's just basically repealing those sections and making technical corrections. Mr. Chair, with me is Professor Joel Olson from Hamline University, who is very adept at our firearm law in Minnesota, and would like to address the committee.
Good morning, Professor. If you would give your name and title, and go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski, members of the committee, my name is Joseph Olson. I'm a professor of law at Hamline University. I am not here today in that capacity. I am here as president of the Gun Owners Civil Rights Alliance of Minnesota, the organization that has represented at the Capitol for the past 25 years the interests of Minnesota's millions of responsible law-abiding gun owners. The Brady Bill is a good bill. It was passed at the federal level in 1994. It was fully implemented about 2 years later. And the Brady Bill and the federal NIC system applies to transfers in Minnesota. They are all covered by the Brady Bill. If you'll notice from the ATF materials or the FBI materials which were passed out. The checks that are made under the Brady Bill include not only for persons who are prohibited under federal law, but also persons who are prohibited under state law. So it's completely duplicative of the state system. It's funded by the federal government. It comes out of the FBI's budget. And it is, in fact, exactly the change that we've heard people for the last two or three years saying what a wonderful thing the Brady Bill is and how we ought to have these checks conducted because they're so good. Well, they are. And the Minnesota system is simply duplicative. It's an unfunded mandate. It costs time. It costs personnel. It is an expense for our sheriffs and police chiefs. And this is a way of saving money. This is a way of streamlining the process, and we are in favor of it.
Any members, any questions for Mr. Olson?
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mullery.
I don't know if you're a professor over there, or what to address you start off, Mr. Olson. Is it Professor Olson or Mr. Olson? Or,
well, actually, over the 25 years, I've been called Senator twice. usually Professor.
I won't defame you that much.
Right. usually Professor and seldom Mr.
Okay. Anyhow, Professor Olson, it looks to me like if you look at the delete all DE2 amendment, basically line 111, the new language there, just totally guts the whole statute. So in essence, you're removing it, aren't you, because of the fact that you're almost never going to be able to prove that, let's say if I had the gun and I'm giving it to a person that I know that doesn't qualify, how is anybody going to prove that I knew that, since you're taking out the requirement of looking at it? Aren't you basically saying we're just abolishing the statute? It sure looks that way to me.
No, we have...
Professor Olson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have another provision as well in the current law that is almost identical to this, deals with providing firearms to people who you know are disqualified. How do folks know people are disqualified? Well, the person providing the gun was convicted at the same time of assault as the person to whom he's providing it to. And he knows the individual, he knows the individual's record, he knows the individual's criminal predilections. That can be established. As I said, we have another statute that is almost identical to this, what this one is going to wind up being, and it seems to work.
Mr. Chair, just I'll point out without asking a question again, which he'll avoid the answer, but basically he avoided the answer by talking to another statute that's limited and didn't really answer this, but so we'll go on.
Professor Olson, do you want to respond to that?
I thought I was responsible.
Okay. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Olson.
Representative would be fine, too.
So, Mr. Olson, so basically the gist of your testimony is that when there's duplication with federal law, we should get rid of Minnesota law. In favor of Minnesota law. I mean, is that's kind of the gist of your very brief testimony. So I just want to offer you an opportunity to be clear about what the principle is behind your support for this legislation.
Mr. Chairman.
Professor Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, in this case it makes sense to do that. Whether that's the situation in other cases, I have no idea.
Fair enough. Mr. Chair and Representative Olson.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Olson. And so in this case, what I heard you argue is that, or present, is that what makes it reasonable to dismiss Minnesota law in favor of federal law is the cost of time, the personnel use, and the expense to our local law enforcement officers, and that should be a guide then for dismissal of Minnesota law in favor of federal law.
Professor Rules.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, in this particular situation, yes.
And Mr. Chair and
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Olson, and hopefully we'll have more time and deliberate time, and that's why I think you know the plea on the part of some of my colleagues to be very deliberate here because we're not quite sure what this time really means here. The only thing I can gather from the testimony so far is that when it comes to issues of saving time and burden on personnel, cost to our local officials, that Minnesota should adopt a dominant posture of subjecting Minnesota law to federal law, that we should move out of the way and let the federal government guide here. And Mr. Chair and members, I would suggest to you that there are issues that have come forward in the past, and I suspect that will come forward again in the future, where a number of legislators here are going to propose we move in the opposite direction. And so, for me, I guess at this point, I just wanted to be real clear, you know, what the foundation is in terms of this proposal. I think we heard part of the answer, and the answer has to do with whenever it takes, whenever it's it produces a savings of time and resources to our local officials, that Minnesota should move out of the way and let the federal government govern our laws, including laws that protect people from the most dangerous people in our society. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Professor Olson, in your opinion, is Minnesota law any more strict than federal law in this case, and or is it more about just a duplication of process?
Well, the Mr. Chairman,
Professor Olson.
Kelly. The NICS system, as the FBI document makes clear, checks against both federal prohibitions and state prohibitions. So if there are any differences, they're caught by the NICS system currently, and which is why the two systems are duplicative, and the feds are paying for a state-of-the-art system with access to incredible databases. And they're providing the service with federal dollars in seconds.
Representative Grunhagen. Or Leidiger, excuse me, got the name right, switched here.
If I could just get a little clarification also, it seems to me what we're doing is we're just using a more advanced, up-to-date database, the NIC system database. That's what this bill is doing. And we're stopping the duplication of effort by also using the state system. Am I correct in assuming that? I mean, this NICS system is being updated by the federal government. It's up to date. It I guess canvasses everybody across the country. So it's a far more sophisticated system. Could you speak to that?
Professor Olson,
Mr. Chairman,
Professor, just a second before you answer that, I'll let you address that too. But actually, the NICS system is pretty fussy. It excludes people more than it should. Mistake after mistake of throwing people out of the system that shouldn't be because of the little things going on here. It actually errs in safety. And now let Professor Olson. I get so many complaints. Find out why there's no reason for being in the system if they are. So it offers more protection, actually, than it was intended to. So Professor Olson, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative. Minnesota sheriffs can use the NICS system in conducting their own checks. What this will do is simply, you know, use the NICS system all the time.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jaskowski.
If Representative Leidiger, if I could respond to the NICS system, actually, in cases where there might be a question at all, if there is ever a question on the local basis, it will pause and put a hold on it, and then offer the ability for any follow-up piece that for some reason might not be completely answered electronically. So it's very well connected, and there's not, if there's any question whatsoever, like Mr. Chair said, it puts a hold on it.
Thank you. That's the kind of system I'd want to use. Thank you.
Any other questions at this point? Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Olson, how many semi-automatic military-style assault weapons are transferred under the terms of this statute in, let's say, a small county?
Professor Olson.
Representative, to the best of my knowledge, there is no data on that available.
Representative, okay. Any other questions, members? Anything either one of you two would like to add at this point? Okay. All right. Representative Jaskowski, do you have any other testifiers in support of your bill?
I do not, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if I could add...
go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have spoken with both AMC and the League of Minnesota Cities. Both those organizations, while they very much support mandate reduction, and this being a mandate, I think the spirit of it is supported. They don't have it in their platform, so are unable to officially take a position on the bill, but I believe both are available if members have questions.
Okay. Did you say something?
Yeah.
Representative Mullery, go ahead.
I mean, if they're supporting it, I'd like to see them say that or something on record rather than somebody else saying they're supporting
Representative
it.
Representative Mullery, I think the Representative Sikorski said they couldn't come out in official support of it, so I doubt if they will.
Correct.
Like a lot of the people we talk to, it seems like the front person will say it, but it takes them 6 weeks to go through their executive committee to get the okay while we sit here in the meantime.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, on that point, I mean, I think it would be fair, however, to, and it sounds like you're open to it, and so is the author, if they have members here to ask them a couple of questions.
To ask the league, you say?
Sure.
Either one. Or the association?
The Association of Counties or the League here that wants to say anything?
Actually, I think perhaps the better question, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I'm interrupting, but...
Go ahead, Representative Martin.
It sounds like they don't want to say anything, but I think perhaps some of us may want to ask them some mm-hmm. questions.
Okay. Good morning. Go ahead and introduce yourself
and
your title.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. And Representative Drazkowski was correct in saying that we do not have an official position on this legislation. We do recognize that there's an element of this that does provide some mandate relief. At the same time, when I discussed this back at the office with the folks who send me over here, there was some concern about loss of local control. And therefore, we have decided that we'll remain neutral on the legislation, at least at this point, until we have more time to vet it with our members.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ryan Erdman. I'm the Public Safety Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. And the conversation we had at the association mirrored almost exactly what Ms. Finn said about their conversation at the League. At this point, we don't have a position. If, in fact, it's determined by this panel that this is truly a duplicative thing, we like the relief of mandates, but we don't have the information in front of us to do anything other than stay neutral at this point.
Okay. Representative Johnson and then Mariani.
Mr. Chair, well, the testimony I'm hearing here is exactly the reason why we need to take more time to give it thoughtful consideration about what we're doing. We just heard from the testifiers that they haven't had the opportunity to really delve into the legislation's all its implications and provide some kind of recommendation. It seems to me that would be in good public policy if we're going to do this kind of substantive change to our gun control laws to get those folks who are going to be most impacted to be able to testify in an intelligent fashion. So, again, that suggests to me that we take a little bit more time to delve into this in a more reflective way.
Your objection so noted. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Fenn, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your...
Ryan Erdman.
Erdman?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Ms. Fenn and Mr. Erdman, so I want to be clear, this posture of neutrality is one that is not a result of a vote or a deliberation on the part of your bodies. I want to be clear here. I think what you're saying is we're neutral because we simply haven't had the time to look at the legislation before us as a body and to have a discussion about it. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, that is correct. We typically spend a lot of time during the interim months talking about things that may or may not come up during the legislative session, and that's where our policies are developed. And that's usually when we come forward with a position on an item, on an issue, it's because we've had those conversations with our membership, and we've not done that on this particular issue.
And I take it that's the same for your, Mr. Chair and Mr. Erdman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, that's correct.
And so then, Mr. Chair and Ms. Fenn, Ms. Erdman, are either or both of your bodies moving to a perhaps emergency session of your governing bodies anytime soon and to discuss this? And if so, can you tell us when that would happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, typically if we have an issue come up during the session where we don't have a policy position, we'll take it up at our next board meeting. And we just had a meeting in the last 10 days or so, so we'll have another next month. And that would probably be the soonest we would have an opportunity to have our board take a formal look at this legislation and contemplate a position.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, we're in the same situation. Our board just met 4 days ago or 5 days ago last Friday, and so we are a month away. We do, in the intervening times, use our executive committee. Given the challenges with this piece of legislation, I suspect our executive committee would defer to the full board, and we will not have an opportunity then for about a month to talk to them.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani,
thank you for your indulgence. Mr. Chair and Mr. Erdman and Ms. Fenn, if I may humbly advise you to advise your governing boards that they don't have a month. As you heard from earlier today, the intent of this body at this point is to very quickly move this bill forward. And my guess is that if you wait a month, you're probably going to be deliberating something that's already passed. And so I would urge you. I think it's really important for us to know from our local officials what kind of premium they would put on mandate relief relative to this issue, and also to spell out for us the importance of local control. And what are the principles of local control that may be violated here that we should be paying attention to? It's a constant value of this body to respect local control as much as possible. And if we're about to violate that, I think it's really important for us to know and to hear officially from folks who are in control of our local governments. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Ms. Finn.
And Representative Mariani, I'll take that message back. And in addition to that, we do have a number of communication vehicles so that we can get the word out to our membership about this. We do represent all the cities in Minnesota. And so once our members become more aware, I suspect some of you will be hearing from them on both sides of the issue.
And it would be a very confusing message coming back when you beg for three biennials for mandate relief and then you don't want one. But Representative Mullery.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and first of all, Ms. Fenn, I agree with Representative Mariani. There's some, the world doesn't wait for people to have come together on something in an ordinary time. This seems to be directly contrary to what the police chief in Minneapolis asked me to do, and there are probably no city in the state is affected more by than Minneapolis by this, so I would think that you would be doing something and listening to input on that. And Mr. Erdman, have you talked to the your in your other hat, not AMC, but as head of MCAC, I believe you're still head of MCAC, having heard from some MCAC members who work in Minneapolis, which again is going to be affected probably the most by this, almost certainly, they are very opposed to this type of thing. So it would seem to me that the biggest, you might say, group of MCAC people, you would at least find out and represent them here, hopefully, pretty quickly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery, MCAC, for those who don't know, is the Association of Community Corrections at Counties. It's County Probation, and I work with that association as well. And we actually meet tomorrow. And this is on the agenda. So there was no special needed. I don't have feedback from them yet, but there's no special meeting needed to get much quicker turnaround. So,
okay, Representative Mullery, you give me a perfect segue into something, as you mentioned. I'm glad you mentioned the Minneapolis police. Police should, and sheriff should listen up here for the next couple minutes. This is a paper written by the deputy police chief of Minneapolis in 1976, where he tears apart the legislature for proposing gun laws. He calls them misdirected. He said police shouldn't be asking for handgun laws, and he doesn't like discretionary power of chiefs or sheriff making decisions, calls it misguided efforts. It basically going completely against gun control and going after the criminal.
Mr. Chair.
A second. Not done yet. Here's a sheriff's conference. 1974. Some Minnesota sheriffs say basic changes are needed in the state's criminal justice system, but Attorney General Warren Spahn's gun control proposal is not among them. To control crime, you have to control the criminal, not the manual objects he uses. And it says a number of sheriffs were in unanimous opposition to Spanis's proposal, which would require a 14-day waiting period to purchase a pistol or get a permit to carry a pistol. And finally, from the MPPOA, the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, Volume 45, Number 5, October 1973, a formal resolution passed by the Board of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers. Be it further resolved that we request the Congress to amend the Gun Control Act of 68 in general to treat the honest citizen in a more equitable manner in particular, and then it goes down to a list. You shouldn't ban mail order sales of guns. It talks about taking ammunition off the registration. And finally, the AFL-CIO resolution resolved that the 13th Constitutional Convention of the Minneapolis AFL-CIO Federation of Labor go on record in opposition to legislation that requires registration or permits, and go on record supporting firearms legislation aimed at the criminal that makes stiff sentences mandatory when firearms or weapons are used in the commission of crime. So I'd like to know where this police and sheriff opposition comes from when they were totally against it just a few years back, with crime on the way down and more handgun murders in the year that this article was written than there is now. I wonder where all this foo-fara comes from about handguns. And go ahead, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a lot of people here weren't even born back when you're citing these things. Things have changed a whole lot since 1975. First of all, I don't know who you were referring to as the deputy chief in Minneapolis at the time. Can you just give his name? But
Gordon S. Johnson.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, I think you probably know that it wasn't a police chief that was head of MPPOA at that time, or a cop. It was one of your fellows, Bob Birch. And Mr. Chair, do you know who one of the attorneys for MPPOA is or was at the time? He's sitting on your committee.
And your point is?
Those were very different times, Mr. Chair, and I actually, Lee Stokes, who was the executive director, Mr. Flaherty's distant predecessor, was in my office a lot. So those were very different times. They didn't relate to these issues. So I don't think quotes from those are really pertinent to this discussion. I don't think they affect it either way.
I thought they were pertinent in the fact that more people were being killed then than there are now. But Representative Mariani, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I kind of differ a little bit with my colleague, Representative Mullery. I think the chair, having introduced an impressive list of advocates, I suppose the argument would be that they would be advocates for the legislation before us. I think it's only fair and proper that this committee call forward representatives from those bodies and ask them if indeed those statements reflect either official positions or desired outcomes on the part of those bodies. And I'm wondering if the chair would, since he's introduced them, if he would, in all fairness now, allow those individual organizations to come forward and speak for themselves and respond to queries from both sides of the issue on this question.
The ones I just mentioned here, you mean?
Sure.
Oh, sure. We plan on having all of them down.
Good. Right.
Oh, I forgot to excuse you two. Did you have anything else to add? All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, Representative Druskowski, you have anybody else before we bring up the opposition?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
Okay, anybody that's going to testify, preferably the law enforcement contingent. We can get them back on the street fighting crime. My friend, Director Flaherty, but I didn't recognize the other two. Would you say your name and title, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Dennis Flaherty, and I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. And with me this morning is Sergeant Mark Elliott of the Bloomington Police Department, who heads up the unit that does these background checks and can speak firsthand on the process. I don't think it's surprising to say that I'm here to oppose this repeal of these statutes, because we strongly feel that these local checks are not redundant. I want to repeat, they are not redundant. And unfortunately, the federal system that is being touted here, while someday may be able to take the place of a local check, is far from being in that position at this point in time. Most of the information that is received, I better qualify that, a lot of the information that is received is incomplete and inconclusive. And the local check that police departments do oftentimes uncovers things that the federal system just today is unable to provide. And so to call the federal system an advanced system would not in any way be accurate. I think it has come a long way, but there are many states that do not enter their data in there. Minnesota, for an example, our own Department of Human Services does not put their records in there, and it requires the local check to actually do a separate check of DHS records in order for them to complete the background, as well as some of our judicial districts in Minnesota that either are slow to or do not submit data. Obviously, this is a grave concern for public safety, but running an organization that represents the overwhelming majority of rank and file officers, it is an officer safety issue to us. It's a public safety issue, and it should be, and you should view it as that, but selfishly, we view it also additionally as an officer safety issue. And so for us, while it may be a mandate, and we have the chiefs of police here that will certainly discuss it, I just have never heard a chief of police complain about the resources it takes to do this. And so I think it is extremely ill-advised for us to go this direction at this point in time. Interesting to note, last week was one of the bloodiest weeks in the history of the United States of America, where in just a 24-hour period, there were 11 officers that were shot. They included Sunday's attacks at traffic stops in Indiana and Oregon, a Detroit police station shooting that wounded four officers, and a shootout at a Port Orchard, Washington Walmart that injured two deputies. On Monday morning, two officers were shot dead and a U.S. Marshal was wounded by a gunman in St. Petersburg. I think that whatever resources that we put into backgrounds is critical. I don't know where these individuals got their guns, and so I really that's not why I bring it up. But I just think that if we need to err, I'd rather err on us being complete on these checks. And we're not exempt from this type of handgun violence or firearm violence in Minnesota. Last legislative session, some of us had to take time out to bury a Maplewood officer who was killed by a firearm. This summer, we had to take time out and bury a Mahnomen County deputy sheriff killed senselessly with a firearm. And not many months before that, a North St. Paul police officer killed senselessly with a firearm. So I guess I'm going to conclude, and I'm going to let the professional, so to speak, that does this every day give some comments, and you can, he can answer all your technical questions. But Mr. Chair and members, we're not there yet with the federal system. And I would respectfully ask that you hold off on this until all of us in law enforcement can be satisfied that a background check is going to reveal all the kinds of things that are necessary. I think we all agree, I hope to God we all agree, there are people among us that just simply should not have firearms. And I hope we're all on that common level. So I'm going to conclude my remarks and ask Sergeant Elliott to make some remarks and then answer questions. And Dave Pisha from the Chiefs of Police Association would like to say a few words also.
Before you start, thank you for your testimony, Director Flaherty. Unfortunately, we'll probably never stop burying officers. I think you and I both know that. We'll probably never get to the point of zero deaths because there's too many freaks and crazies out there. I don't think that these deaths would have been prevented. And there's all sorts of opinion and all sorts of law enforcement officers, and you do represent the largest contingent of them. But there used to be a contingent named Cops Against Gun Control and a number of officers that were against it, too, I being one of them. But at any rate, before the handgun permit bill was passed, people stood on the floor, Matt and Tenza and others on the House floor, and said that basically blood would run in the streets. There was quotes about ambulances would be common, that there would be more suicides, there'd be all sorts of things bad that would happen. Nothing did, and so I guess we just have to be careful with all the cautions. And you were careful to say that you don't know where the guns came from, so I give you credit for that, and you weren't trying to, sensationalize it, but I'm just talking about all the things that have happened in the past. So, the next, Sergeant, is it?
Yes.
You state your name and title, and go ahead.
Mark Elliott. I'm a sergeant with the Bloomington Police Department. I currently run our property crime division and supervise our licensing, which includes permits to purchase handguns. Earlier I heard that the state NICS system mirrors the Minnesota state statute, and I do not believe that is quite accurate. There are two provisions in Minnesota statute 624713 that are slightly more restrictive, and those are for persons that in Subdivision 1, Section 7, that have been charged with committing a crime of violence and placed in a pretrial diversion program by the court before a disposition. In other words, these are people who committed violent crimes and they are awaiting trial. They would be ineligible to get a permit under Minnesota statute. They would be eligible under the federal NICS system. The other section is under...
Sergeant, just a second. I'm sorry. For clarification, then, these are people that are accused of crimes, not convicted, just suspected, and they've been charged?
And they've been placed in a pretrial diversion program.
Okay. Sounds good.
The other is in Section 11, and that's for gross misdemeanor offenses. Again, the federal system covers felony offenses and misdemeanor crimes of violence. It does not cover a gross misdemeanor. And some of those state statutes are crimes committed for the benefit of a gang, assaults motivated by bias, false imprisonment, neglect or endangerment of a child, burglary in the fourth degree, riot, stalking, and setting a spring gun. All obviously crimes that have a violent nature, and those persons would be prohibited under state statute but not under federal. The other provisions in the state statute pretty much mirror the federal system. The federal system, the NICS system, does not have all the data, and if you talk to the people who run it, they'll admit that they do not have all the data. Some of that was touched on by Mr. Flaherty, in that if the information is available at a local level but not uploaded to the federal system, obviously they don't have that. Fortunate for us in Minnesota, the current statute does allow investigation, and in fact requires investigation by the chief of police or his designee to issue these permits. Part of that process is to check the federal system, but another part of that process is to conduct an investigation, as the statute says, and make a reasonable effort to check other available state and local record-keeping systems. And that's where we find a lot of the people that are prohibited. And these people are prohibited under federal law or under the NICS system, but NICS does not have their information in there. So by running a NICS check, you would not find it. I'll give you some information from Bloomington on that. Last year, Bloomington had 541 permit applications. We denied 37 of them. None of those 37 denials were denied by an NCIS hit or the NICS hit. But they were disqualifiers under that system. It's just those disqualifiers were not reported into that system. One of the reasons is that DHS or Department of Human Services does not have all their data imported. In fact, August of 2010 is when they started importing data into the federal system. Before that time, they did not report to it, so it would not be available, and they currently do not have all their data uploaded. So at this time, you would not be able to get most of that DHS information. And those are people with mental illness mostly, also chemical dependency treatment people. So by doing our own investigation on that, we're able to find these people that the federal system says are not eligible under their guidelines, but there's no information in the federal system to say that they can't have one. And that is information I have for you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Sergeant, thank you. Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Sergeant, then once that data is downloaded by DHS, then that will be on the NICS system. Do you have any idea the time frame on that?
There was not a time frame given by the federal NICS system on when Minnesota had to have that information downloaded. I believe it's as they are able to. That's only some of the information. There's also information that we're able to get through these local investigations that is not stuff that there's no way that there's a local guideline or a method in place to upload this. And chemical dependency is a huge one. The federal system says if people are currently chemically dependent, that they are not eligible. If you look into the federal guidelines in the NICS system, it talks about people who have recent chemical dependency issues. This includes people who were charged with chemical dependence or chemical related crimes, a controlled substance crime, but they have not been convicted of that. In other words, if they were caught with, say, methamphetamine, and a field test showed that it was positive methamphetamine, they were charged, but they were put into a drug court diversion program or something like that, they would be eligible to get a permit under the federal system because there would be no reporting. But yet, under the federal guidelines, they're not eligible. So they shouldn't get that. We're able to catch that through our local checks. The other problem with the federal system is that there are quite a few states that do not report currently into the system. Like I said, Minnesota just started reporting in August of this year. There are 16 states, according to NICS, that contribute to contribute their mental health information into that system. 21 states contribute some information, which would be less than 100 submissions, and then the rest of the states do not give information on mental health disqualifiers to the NICS system. So that information is partial at best and certainly inadequate by what our standards are.
Anybody else right now? We're going to give the opposition full time to testify. We're not going to cut anybody short. But just want to remind our members here that we've got another bill up yet today, a fairly important one. So our next presenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Mr. Flaherty mentioned, I'm Dave Peacha, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, and we represent over 350 chiefs throughout the state of Minnesota. I've been asked to come down here and just express our support for the position that you have just heard, but opposition to the bill that has been presented. We do have our legislative committee meeting tomorrow, at which time I hope to have more input for the committee if we have that opportunity to explain further why we oppose this bill. And having heard some of the previous testimony, I started my law enforcement career in 1976 as a Hennepin sworn deputy in Hennepin County, and by looking in the mirror every day I can tell you things have changed, and they have definitely changed in the law enforcement profession as well. And we support the opposition of this bill. Actually, initially we were supporting the extension to the 5 years, and this one we oppose as well.
Thank you for your testimony. I started in law enforcement 1 year before you did. I've been kicked, punched, shot at twice, and I'm still a big believer in this bill. Any other questions? Is there any other testimony by opposition members here?
Mr. Chair.
My old friend Heather. Ms. Martins, is that your name?
Yes.
Could you approach the mic there, give your name and title, and go ahead. Does somebody have a question? Oh, Representative Gothier, I'm sorry, I missed you there.
I have a question for Sergeant Elliott.
We can bring him back. Sergeant, could you come down and answer a question here? Apologize.
Actually, it might be two questions. Mr. Chair, Sergeant Elliott, you talked about people who have committed a crime of violence and are awaiting trial. Would this include somebody who had been charged with domestic violence?
If they were placed, the statute refers to someone placed in a pretrial diversion program.
Right.
So if they were placed in a pretrial diversion program, yes.
So they would be eligible to get a gun if they were put in that?
Yes.
Okay. And the other question, Mr. Chair, if I may, an example, is if we put a gang member who is believed to be dangerous into a treatment diversion program or drug court, they would be eligible to get a gun.
If they were in the federal gang database, no. If they were not in there, okay. If they were placed by the court in a chemical dependency program, is that what you're asking?
Mm-hmm.
If that information was passed from that chemical dependency treatment program to the Department of Human Services and they entered it into the federal NICS system, they would not be eligible. But okay. If each of those items did not happen, they would be eligible.
Just a comment, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gothier, go ahead.
So it's possible that somebody is ordered to treatment who has private insurance or whatnot, so they wouldn't be designated by DHS for payment and so on and so forth. So this person who is a gang member, in fact, could go to treatment and, in fact, get a weapon.
I believe so.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Elliott, how often do you have gang members applying for a permit to purchase?
Not very often that we know of.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Flaherty. Mr. Elliott, excuse me.
Thank you, Sergeant. I don't have any other names here for questions, so. Oh, Representative Grunhagen, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Elliott, what, you know, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but based on the gun crimes in Minnesota, how many are committed by people or individuals with a gun permit?
That I don't know.
Okay, members, thank you, Sergeant. Appreciate it. Ms. Martins, state your name and title and go ahead.
Heather Martins, Executive Director of Citizens for Safer Minnesota and Protect Minnesota. We represent the citizens of Minnesota who are concerned about public safety and protecting the community. We believe that when we're talking about mandate relief, there is indeed a mandate on law enforcement in the state of Minnesota, and that is to protect their communities. We do not want law enforcement to get relief from its mandate to protect its communities. This is an important function on the part of local law enforcement to prevent people who are not entitled to possess a weapon from going and buying one. I would like to point out that I have had experience with a great number of responsible gun owners who use this local background check system to screen buyers at gun shows. Would not have access to any kind of proof of background check anymore if the state of Minnesota were to rely only on the NICS system, because private individuals don't have access to the federal database. So what you would be doing is removing a mechanism for responsible gun owners to actually get proof that the person they're selling to is not prohibited from owning a weapon. I'd also like to point out that we did work on getting data into the NICS system. We were very concerned about the Virginia Tech shooter. We're concerned now about the Tucson shooting, where mental health issues are often a factor in gun crimes. We're very concerned about the lag time that it takes these records to get into the federal database, and we don't think it's worth what you're proposing. Any kind of savings is really going to occur, because when this happens, as we see in the community at large, the cost is astronomical in law enforcement, judicial, healthcare. Injuries cause lost days of work. The cost to the communities is very, very high of gun violence. We believe that prevention is a much more cost-effective way to prevent gun crime, and keeping access to guns keeping guns unavailable to criminals is the best way to prevent that. Now, Mr. Olson himself said the Brady bill is a good bill. I was kind of surprised to hear that, because he and the NRA fought that tooth and nail. They fought it with all they had at that time. I'm glad to see they've changed their mind, that background checks are in fact a good thing. But I think what we're seeing is really an effort to roll back our effective Minnesota background check system. Arizona and other states that are mentioned have a much higher rate of gun death than Minnesota does, and I think that can be attributed in part to our system that we have in Minnesota to protect the public. I would also just like to say we are very concerned also about domestic violence convictions. We're concerned about the lag time that it takes for those to get into the federal system, if they get there at all. And we find that those are a large part people who know each other are actually the most likely to be victims of violence if there is a crime that occurs. I think in brief, I would obviously we're very, very opposed to getting rid of the safeguard that we have in Minnesota, keeping guns out of the hands of criminals. I would like to point out that when the Brady Bill was adopted, and since then, the rate of gun crime has been decreasing. You also, Mr. Chair, pointed out that fewer people are being shot in Minnesota than were when we adopted our state background check system. I think that's worth noting. And I think, finally, I would just like to ask, really what we're seeing is an effort to get rid of background checks altogether, which I think is irresponsible. And I would like each member of the committee to consider, when you have to explain your vote to constituents, I think you should consider whose side are you on? Are you on the side of criminals who want to get easy access to guns, or are you on the side of the public that expects to be protected by its own law enforcement agencies? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martins. I think that was a real rude question, an offensive question, that nobody has asked you a question like that, to ask our members what their motives are to be on the side of criminals. Since you opened the can of worms up, the Tucson shooting, you saw that bald-headed goon on TV. Do you think that he went and would apply for a handgun permit and that would have stopped that killing of Congressman Giffords?
If he goes to a federally licensed dealer to buy his guns, as he did, he has to have a permit. If he were in Minnesota, he would have had to have that permit because our federally licensed firearms dealers have to make him present it. Yes.
Do you think it would have stopped? He wouldn't have gone and got one somewhere else, or?
I think he would have had access to something less desirable, would have taken a lot more time to get it. Yes, I think it does make it more difficult for him to get access.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Anybody got any questions of Ms. Martins, Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Martins, just very briefly, I want to thank you for coming and testifying. And I don't think we've met before, and I'm hoping that afterwards we can have an opportunity to chat a little bit. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Representative, Mullery, go ahead, Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, I hadn't planned on doing this, but I've already put my objections to the way this has occurred, and in view of that, plus the fact that we've had testimony that this is going to endanger police, and especially the police in my city, the people in my city, I'd like to have a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested when we vote. And any more testimony by anybody out there? Representative Draskowski, do you have any?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I don't have any other testifiers. If that was your question.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, just a couple things as a representative. And I'm not in law enforcement. As I mentioned in the past, I did jail ministry for 13 years. But, when I look at this map I have in front of me, I see that over 35 states are satisfied with the federal system. The other thing is, no database is going to be perfect, okay? There's always going to be some flaws. And I understand the double-checking aspect of it. But, as a layperson, and I'm open to be contested on this, is... you're dealing with, in many cases, crimes of passion. My understanding is that most gun crimes are not committed by people with a gun permit. And with the availability of guns in our society, I'm not sure that a permit process is overly effective in keeping the guns out of the hands of the people who want to commit that crime. Now, there was some testimony that there has been some reduction since the Brady Bill. The last comment I just make is that the somebody's intent on injuring somebody else, there's other things besides guns that they can control. So ultimately, it gets back to having a proper consequence for doing the type of crime towards other human beings deliberately and intentionally. And I personally think having a death penalty in the state for deliberate and intentional infliction of crimes would be much more effective in deterring those types of crimes than gun control laws. So those are some of my thoughts as a representative. I just wanted to have them a part of the public record.
Okay, Representative Dostkowski, do you have anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, thank you for hearing the bill. Members, again, this is a mandate reduction bill. We have redundancy in the law. You know, I've talked to a good number of law enforcement folks that really question why we have this, are very supportive of this bill. I don't know exactly where the disconnect is or why there is disconnect between the association representatives we have seen here and those people I talk to in the field, but those people who actually work under budgets realize that it doesn't make sense to be practicing in areas of redundancy, and this is a common sense bill. I appreciate your support.
Okay, we're going to take a roll call vote, but we're going to, Representative Kelly, do you want to restate your motion?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move the bill and recommend that House File 161 be passed and re-referred to civil law.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Comments? Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention on this issue, and I'm not sure the people that I've heard from so far were really aware of the DE2 amendment. I think it was in response to the original bill, which, of course, was much less comprehensive. And this was just before I had to come down to the committee. The count was 172 opposed and one in favor.
What count was that?
On emails that I received with respect to the bill. I would just like to mention, Mr. Chair, that when you refer to the procedure for this bill, you just said we were going to pass it. And when you talked about the Castle Doctrine, you also said we're going to pass it. The committee process, as far as I'm aware, is one in which the outcome is not necessarily a given before we take up any testimony. So maybe what you meant is we're going to take a vote on it and see what happens, but I would just suggest, Mr. Chair, that it would be more respectful of the process if we didn't represent the conclusion as being a given.
No,
and Mr. Chair, on this vote, I think I'm going to go with the Police and Peace Officers Association, as I have pretty consistently for the last 14 years.
It's your right to do so. Thanks for your notes. It's the chair's prerogative to say pretty much whatever he wants, as long as it's not rude and offensive, and I just meant that I'm going to pass the bill, and if it doesn't pass, then I'll be wrong. You can make fun of me. No. Representative Mulray, did you have something, or...?
No.
All
Mr.
right,
Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Over here.
Oh, Representative Smith. Sorry.
There. I know the author has discussed this as a mandate reduction bill, and there was a suggestion that at some point we may have to explain to our constituents our vote. I'm going to do that right now. Representative Dostkowski, it may be mandate reduction, but I also look at this bill as what part of the words shall not be infringed don't some people understand? And looking back at the 2003 debate on the Personal Protection Act, I checked my notes and I found a quote, and it says this: from the hour the pilgrims landed to the present day, events and tendencies prove that to ensure peace, security, and happiness, the rifle and the pistol are indispensable. That's a quote from George Washington, the first president of the United States. So I consider this bill as a Second Amendment issue, and that's why I'm voting yes.
No, Representative Mariani, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, and so we obviously are, you know, wandering into exactly why this this kind of legislation is so incredibly divisive in our society. When we get into these pretty strong rhetorical articulation of our interpretation of the Constitution. It's a long-standing, and my good friend Representative Smith, you know this well. You are a terrific legislator, and you know this well. It's a long-standing principle of our legal system that we certainly prioritize the rights of individuals, but there are circumstances in which, in fact, we do infringe on those rights. We infringe on those rights, quite bluntly put, when someone's crazy, when someone's violent, when someone has a history of violence. I don't think the gulf that exists in our society is as big as we want to make it out with the rhetoric that we throw around here. I think most people understand that there is a reasonable, common sense way in which we can honor the rights of our citizens at the same time that we protect our citizens from those, in your words, Mr. Chair, who are, I think you said, crazy, kooks, lunatics, etc. I think the public expects nothing less of us than to walk that careful balance here, and I think we're about to disrupt that balance by what's being put forth. But I look forward to the ongoing debate here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And then, Representative Hilty, I will apologize for that saying we're going to pass the bill. It was a little abrupt, so I'll try to watch that in the future, not predict a foregone conclusion. So thank you. Any other comments? If not, roll call vote is requested. Go ahead.
Cornish.
Aye.
Woodard.
Aye.
Mullery.
No.
Gauthier.
No.
Grunhagen.
Yes.
Hilty.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Kelly.
Aye.
Kiefer.
Aye.
Kreisel.
Aye.
Leidiger.
Yes.
Mariani.
No.
McDonald.
Aye.
Moran.
No.
Nornis.
Aye.
Slocum.
No.
Smith.
Aye.
Okay, the vote being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the bill is passed.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you very much. Reverend Guaflo, do we have enough time, you think, to finish by noon? All right. Representative Garofalo, do you have anybody to move your bill?
Yeah, you.
it was going to be Representative Woodard, I believe.
I would like to move this bill, Mr. Chairman. I recommend that House File 161 be passed by this committee and re-referred to the Civil Justice Committee.
68.
Judicial Committee.
Wrong number.
All right. 68. Bill's moved on the table. Go ahead, Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure. I had advised some people that we were laying this bill over for possible inclusion. That was my understanding.
Would you rather do that?
It's the chair's prerogative, but I think that might be, in case there are issues that people want addressed, that would give stakeholders some time to work this out. If my recollection is mistaken, then I'm just have to apologize to some people.
Okay. The I guess the bill will have to go to the judiciary.
Okay, so we will. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to apologize to those who... I told that we were laying this bill over for possible inclusion, but I want to just to those people who I committed to work with in the past, I'm committed to work with them as well as this bill goes to Chairman Smith's committee, if it goes to Chairman Smith's committee.
Counting the chickens.
Okay, so the motion stands, and Representative Garofalo, go ahead and offer your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the interest of time and making sure that we have a testifier to be able to testify, I will be brief. House File 68 closes a hole that's currently in law. Right now, when a person is found to be negligent, this is excluding all statutes regarding alcohol, drugs, those items. When a person is negligent and their actions result in the death of another individual, there are essentially two different charges that are offered. One is a misdemeanor, one is a felony. The felony standard for the burden of proof is gross negligence. The misdemeanor level is for negligence. What this would do is create a third option, sort of a third way in the middle, where only in those cases where a person is, first of all, negligent, and second of all, their actions result in the death of another individual, it would give the option or the flexibility of charging with a gross misdemeanor. So, Mr. Chairman, that's my testimony. That explains the bill. I believe that Abate is here. And we could just take some brief testimony, and I will stand for any questions. But, Mr. Chairman and members, I appreciate the hearing, and I would ask for your support of this bill.
Thank you. And my friend, state your name and title, and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Mac Backlund. I'm the state coordinator for Abate of Minnesota, the largest advocacy group in the state for motorcycling, and we have thousands of members throughout the state. Each year, motorcyclists, pedestrians, bicyclists, vehicle drivers, and their passengers are killed by other motorists who enter the roadway into their path, turn left into their path, or otherwise fail to yield the right of way. While hoping to save a few seconds of their time, their actions result in tragedy and heartbreak for the families and those involved. Currently, these are misdemeanor citations if the vehicle operator is found to be sober and drug-free. Those who are cited have committed only a simple misdemeanor violation. ABATE of Minnesota feels that Minnesota should strengthen the penalties for those who kill others while driving in a negligent manner and raise the offense to the level of gross misdemeanor. I respectfully urge you to support House File 68. And Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Backlund. And if I may question first, how many years have we been at this, trying to get this? I think when I first came here, Representative Smith was chair, and we had this going.
In its present form, 5 years, and with some variations a couple years before that.
Okay, well, hopefully this year we can get the job done. But committee members, any question? Representative Mueller and then Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, this is for Representative Garofalo, and I know that you worked with Representative Bigham and some other people. Is this the final form that came out of that group, or is this your original? And I know that you were working with different people on it before. Is this the final form that came out by agreement with everyone or not? Or is this back to your original?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulray, this is the bill how I think it would best be suited in terms of a final product or an agreed-to product. We never took this issue up on the House floor. I am certainly willing to work with stakeholders and work with other members to improve it and gain additional support, as well as to gain support from the Dayton administration. But this is the bill. The bill as it's introduced is the bill how I would like it. But again, Representative Mullery, I am open-minded on any changes or suggestions you have for it.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, and I hope, and I can't remember, I know you that other groups, Representative Bigham, for instance, supported passing something but different from your original, which is apparently what this is. So I think we'll try and figure out what those things are at least before. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to state why I'm not supporting this bill, and that's because some of the top prosecutors in the state have told me this is a very bad bill and that it will take away their possibility to get felonies on really bad cases. And so I'm understanding there's disagreement, you might say, within the County Attorneys Association on this, but and that's why I'm the people that I think are really top prosecutors don't support this, but just wanted to say why I'll be not supporting this.
And Mr.
Representative Gruffel.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mullery, I want to be clear that I've worked with the County Attorneys Association, and while they are in favor of a third way of doing this, I don't want to state their support for this exact language as it is right now. As was mentioned in a Star Tribune editorial earlier last year, the county attorneys do support a third option. It's important to maintain for members of the committee to understand that the felony charge right now, the charge you're referring to, I am not modifying or in any way manipulating that gross negligence standard, but it's important for members of the committee to understand gross negligence is an incredibly difficult burden to prove. It's bordering just short of intent. But in terms of the county attorneys, that's their position. They support a third way. Again, I don't want to overstate it for this, but just to be clear, I am in no way weakening, modifying, or changing that third option. And in fact, statewide, it's very rarely is that charge offered, just to be clear.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, as the bill moves forward, or likely moves forward, could you give us some numbers on how many cases you suspect, what you think the fiscal impact, or what the fiscal impact will be to the judiciary and to probation, that sort of thing, so we have some hard numbers on the impact of the bill?
Oh, Representative Garofalo, sorry.
Mr. Chairman, just
daydreaming.
Want to make sure that I don't cause any problems when you come to my committee, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, as you know, these in any crime, it's each situation, it's behavior that drives the number of caseloads, and I can't speculate on the number of accidents where the facts of the case will apply to this situation. I will tell you that, in my opinion, we're looking at single digits statewide.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Nobody on the list? Representative Groff, do you have any other people to testify?
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for the hearing. I ask for members' support, and again, I'm committed to working with the stakeholders on getting an agreement and finally getting this done this year.
Thank you. Anybody out here testify in opposition? Okay. Thank you very much. What? Oh, Nancy Johnson? Did you want to testify? Excuse me. And then Scott Hersey, is he here too? You can be ready in the queue then. Okay, go ahead. State your name and title and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Nancy Johnson, president of Minnesotans for Safe Driving, a nonprofit victim advocacy and traffic safety education organization. We support the enhancement of penalties from misdemeanor to gross misdemeanor for those who cause a crash, the result in death, or great bodily harm. We are aware that this legislation does not include great bodily harm, but we are asking this committee to add the language. Many people are surviving car crashes that didn't 20 years ago. Because cars are safer, with new EMS protocol, the crash victim has a better chance of survival. These people and their families, whose lives will never be the same again because of the serious injuries that they get on these crashes, they need to feel the justice was there for them too. Every victim crime in statute has an enhancement based on the damage done to the victim, just as property crimes are enhanced based on the value of the property damaged or stolen. These victims should be treated in a similar manner. You'll notice in the handout that you have for what is happening in other states that most of them do have a higher penalty for death or serious injury. We have worked with many victims who are devastated when they hear that the person who caused the crash that killed or seriously injured their loved one was only given a careless driving charge, or in some cases even a petty misdemeanor ticket. We know that some crashes do not meet the level of negligence, and this bill should not be addressing those crashes. But people who are negligent should pay a higher price when they devastate another family. Thank you. If anybody has any questions.
Thank you very much. And any questions for the witness? Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Next testifier, if you would come up and state your name and title and proceed.
My name is Scott Hersey. I'm an assistant Dakota County attorney, and I'm testifying in support of this bill. I can tell the committee that our office had drafted a bill that's very similar to this. The only significant difference is we use the term negligence instead of careless, simply to make it a little cleaner, but the legal standard is exactly the same as the courts define. And careless driving is negligent driving as our courts define it. And the County Attorneys Association had its full board meeting last Friday, and they did approve our version, which is substantially and substantively the same here. And I'm testifying in support of this particular bill because we believe the existing statute is inadequate to address the loss of a loved one. I've been through a number of meetings where we meet with the families of people who have been killed by careless drivers, and we always get the question, why is there no stronger law? And we indicate that that has been brought up to the legislature, but we don't have another option at this point. And the option would be a gross misdemeanor resulting in death. We believe that this will give judges more options. This will double the probationary period. careless driving has a one-year probationary period. This will provide a two-year probationary period. Judges can monitor the behavior of the offender, and they can require treatment programs. They could require a psychological treatment program. They could require anger management programs, and they can monitor the behavior for a longer period of time. And we analogize this particular statute to other criminal statutes where the severity of the crime depends on the injury or damages caused. In the assault area, we have a first-degree assault, which is a 20-year felony, and that involves great bodily harm. Third-degree assault involves less harm. It's substantial bodily harm. That's a 5-year felony. Fourth-degree assault is an assault on a peace officer with demonstrable bodily harm. That's a 3-year felony. So there is precedent in the way we have set up our statutes dealing with the nature of the injury caused. As pointed out briefly a moment ago, there is a felony in Minnesota called criminal vehicular homicide when someone kills another person by their driving conduct, but they're grossly negligent. And that's a very high standard that has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And that requires very great negligence without even scant care. And the Minnesota Supreme Court in 2005 said even falling asleep at the wheel, where a person has no control over that vehicle or what it does, that is insufficient to constitute gross negligence. So we believe there is a middle standard here. And while I understand what some prosecutors have brought up, and we have discussed this at the Criminal Law Committee of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, that any time you have a criminal vehicular homicide where the issue is gross negligence, the judge will have to include a lesser offense in the event that the jury believes that there isn't gross negligence, but there's regular negligence. So a careless driving will almost always be included, and granted, if this is in fact passed, this would be included as a lesser included to the felony. But what that does is that puts the decision in the hands of the citizens of the jury where it should be. So I would urge support of this bill. I might also note that there are two of our sister states, both North Dakota and Wisconsin, that actually have felonies for negligent driving. They don't make it a gross misdemeanor. They make it a felony if a person causes another's death while they're driving negligently. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Any questions from members? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be quick. I know we want to move, this is an important issue, and I've often had the same sense that, you know, I read in the papers like, oh, my God, somebody got killed, and, you know, so why this outcome? But I also want to be very deliberate here about, I also know that, and I'm a driver, like most of us, and occasionally we'll do something dumb because it just happens, you know. And so I just want to be real clear here that if we were to adopt this, in truly instances of an accident, will there be room in terms of the work that you do as a prosecutor to accommodate that instance? And as I read the language, you know, what I'm kind of worried about is, you know, what does carelessly mean? I mean, it seems to me that that could be a real fine. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the fineness of, I mean, some things are so obvious, I think, for most of us that, hey, you were just not, you really weren't, you were irresponsible. And some things pretty clearly, look, it just happened, you know, for whatever. How do you deal with that? And will this legislation take away that kind of common sense discretion on your part?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Hersey. Mariani, this will not take away our discretion. We look at any case involving death very seriously in our office. We staff it. We meet with the county attorney. We meet with the family members. We talk to the police officers. We take it very seriously, and we look at the standard. We look at the behavior, the particular behavior in this case. They are taken on a case-by-case basis, and we use our best judgment as to how to proceed with the charges, keeping into account the need for public safety, taking into account the concerns of the victims, and taking into account the views and the input and the investigation of law enforcement. So we take this very seriously, and this will actually assist us in exercising our discretion. And the standard is a negligent standard. That is a failure to use the standard of care that a reasonable and prudent person would use in the same circumstances. And that's a legal standard that the judge explains in each of these cases.
Okay. Members, any more questions? Thank you, Mr. Hersey. And any comments here before we restate the motion? Any questions? All righty. Representative Garofalo, did you have any closing comments before we...
No, Mr. Chairman.
Send your bill to civil law. No, I'm just kidding. Representative Woodard, would you like to restate your motion?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I recommend that House File 68 be passed and re-referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Okay, you've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Bill passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Is that it? Are we adjourned?
No.
Did he
adjourn? Winners are next meeting. Tomorrow, 10:15, we have a couple bills up. Meeting adjourned.